1964. The world saw a sound they never heard before. Four mop tops up on the TV screen. Old men laughed and the young girls screamed. Every red-blooded American boy wanted to learn to play guitar. The British invasion hit the American shore. We saw them standing there, shaking their shaggy hair. More people watched TV that night than ever had before. February 9th, 1964. Kennedy is gone. The Beatles brought back joy when they came along. February 9th, 1964. The whole world changed that day. A magical mystery tour on February 9th, 1964. Beatlemania still going strong these days. Folks of every age still come to hear McCartney play. Oh, what a magic night that was. We're still singing and believing. All you need is love. Thanks to February 9th and 1964.
That was Kent Blazy and February 9th, 1964, taken from his latest album From the Beatles to the Bluebird. You are tuned into the Whiskey and Cigarettes Show in the company of your Cabacus Nova, Romy the Rodeo, and the Italian DJ Nick. And my people, it's truly an honor and a pleasure to welcome to the show today singer-songwriter supreme, Kent Blazy. Hey, Kent, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, thanks, Kent. And I want to, of course, thank you so, so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, same to you. Works both ways, you know.
Indeed. Well, the pleasure is certainly ours. Well, we just heard this great song of yours, February 9th, 1964. Now, when it comes to the origins of this song, how did it come about? Are there any stories behind it?
Well, I was lucky enough to be in Liverpool last year. And it was about June, but it was very cold over there. So I, of course, had to get my picture taken with the Beatles statues that are on the dock. And I was wearing a Bluebird sweatshirt because I'd done a benefit there a couple weeks before. And they gave me the sweatshirt and it was cold. And so somebody took a picture and I loved the picture. And I thought, that's a great album title, From the Beatles to the Bluebird, because if Garth Brooks hasn't been heard doing If Tomorrow Never Comes at the Bluebird and got a record deal because of that, we'd probably both be in prison by now.
Well, yes, it is very well said. And, you know, when it comes to the album From the Beatles to the Bluebird, how would you best describe this album? What are people getting with this latest offering of yours?
Well, it started out being, I wanted to let people who weren't really aware or around when the Beatles came out, how much they changed the world that one night on February 9th, 1964. We were in America recovering from Kennedy being assassinated, and it was kind of like 9-1-1. People were just walking around in a daze, kind of gloomy, and the Beatles came along and they brought this joy. More people watched TV that night than ever had before, and crime rate in America dropped while they were on TV. And I just find that astonishing. And what they started that night has repercussions that are still echoing through the universe as far as all the people they've touched and the music they changed, the politics, the clothing, all of that. And it's liking to make people aware of that. I also wanted to write songs about, like, Paul McCartney is out there 84 years old. He's playing 3 hours a night and singing in the same key that he sang them in originally. And so that I Want to Die Young at a Very Old Age was about him. It just lets you know we don't have to stop because people say, well, you're old, you have to quit performing or whatever. You know, the Rolling Stones just put out a new record, and Willie Nelson's still out there. So it's kind of a nod to all those people that are still out there doing what they love to do.
Well, it's a fabulous album indeed. And would you be able to share the story with us of how you first got involved in the music industry and what inspired you to become a songwriter?
Well, the Beatles came out before I really cared about music, but all my friends were all big Beatles fans. And so some of them started playing guitar. And so for me, it took Roger McGuinn of the Byrds playing that 12-string Rickenbacker that got me interested in that sound. And from then on, I started begging my folks to get me a guitar, and I got one Christmas. And it was a POS, you know, the strings were real high off the neck and it sounded terrible, but I just kept working on it. And I had been writing poetry and had some that had been in, like, high school newspapers and high school yearbooks. And so I didn't know anybody else's songs, so I just started putting my music that I knew with the lyrics that I had from the poems I was writing. And that kind of started me off. And once I learned how to play guitar better, a friend down the street had a Stratocaster and he wanted to sell it. And he said he'd give me guitar lessons if I bought him cigarettes. So that's kind of how I didn't really have a teacher, but I had him showing me some licks every once in a while and kind of took it from there, started some bands and been at it ever since.
Wow, very nice. Well, it's all thanks to a pack of cigarettes. That's amazing.
Exactly. Well, that was Kentucky. You know, everybody smoked in Kentucky back then. So tobacco capital of the world.
Yes, indeed. And when it comes to your songwriting process, what does your typical songwriting process look like, and how do you find inspiration for your songs?
You know, I don't know if there's a typical process. I kind of joke and tell people I'll take them any way they come. It's a different process if you're co-writing with somebody. You kind of try to be prepared by having some ideas to show them, and they hopefully have some ideas to show you. If I'm writing by myself, I keep stacks and stacks of ideas and books that I can go to kind of motivate me. And I really don't buy into writer's block because of that. You know, I can always find something to work on. And if I'm writing by myself, lately what I've been doing, like with the Beatles to the Bluebird and also for the Byrds record that I did, I'll just come up with a title that I like and I'll write it at the top of the page, but I won't work on it. I'll just kind of think about it. And every day I'll come and maybe write something on the page. And when the page is full, I'll think, well, do I have a song here? And I'll start piecing it together like a jigsaw puzzle or something to try to turn it into a song. And that's how I've been doing it a lot lately. And then sometimes I can be walking my dog at this little lake by where I live, and all of a sudden a song wants to come out. And luckily now we have voice memos on the phone where we can capture that, where before I used to walk around with a little cassette player in my pocket just in case. And so the iPhones have made it a lot easier to retain the ideas that come to you, either with putting it in notes as far as a title or something like that, or recording a melody if it comes to you. So the iPhone's been a big help for songwriters.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I mean, you know, you have to definitely thank technology for stuff like that for sure. And of course, you know, your collaboration with Garth Brooks has produced some of his biggest hits. And how did your partnership with him come about? And what is the secret behind the success of your collaborations?
Well, it's interesting. In Nashville, when you're trying to be a writer, you have to have all the irons in the fire, as they call it. And so I was writing during the day. I was playing with bands at night. I was playing on other people's sessions. So I started a demo studio where I could demo my own songs, but demo other people. And if you sing like me, you needed demo singers. And demo singers were Faith Hill, Martina McBride, Joe Diffie, Billy Dean, Randy Travis. All these people sang demos for me because they couldn't get a record deal. Trisha Yearwood. Wow. And so I met Garth because he was cleaning churches and selling boots, and he thought he could make more money singing demos. And so he brought me over a cassette and played me six songs that he'd written and sang. And I said, well, I love what you're doing. I'll be glad to start using you on some demos. And when he was leaving, he said, I write a little bit too. And so we set up a writing appointment, and he came in with his idea, If Tomorrow Never Comes. And he had this snippet of it, and he played it for me. And I said, I love this. Let's write this song. And we did. And we pitched it around town for about a year. And we pitched him around town for about a year. And people said, nobody's going to give Garth Brooks a record deal because it sounds like you're gargling on the radio when you say Garth. And so back to the Bluebird Cafe, he got to play one song one night because another artist hadn't shown up. And somebody who was in the audience from Capitol Records to hear the other person heard Garth sing If Tomorrow Never Comes and came up to him afterwards and said, I know I passed on you for the third time this week, but maybe I missed something. Why don't you come back in? And he went back in and he got a record deal. And, you know, Garth is one of these, there's nobody else like Garth. And for so many reasons, but we're still friends. We still write together. He just put out a new record. I have three songs on that. And that's very unusual these days. You can write a number one song with somebody and never hear from them again. But right. I think he just honors that I was there to help him at the beginning. And he hasn't forgotten where he came from. And that's very unusual these days. But he's just a great friend and a great co-writer. There's nobody better as a co-writer than Garth Brooks.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's wonderful that, you know, like you said, he hasn't forgotten where he came from and who helped him get to where he is today. So that's fantastic that you guys are still friends in that regard. And you mentioned that, you know, you don't believe in writer's block, but I'm curious, have there been any specific moments that have tested your creativity?
Well, there's sometimes when you'll get in a room with somebody and you run your ideas by them and they don't like them, or they run their ideas by you and you don't like them. And that's kind of if I was just to stare at you for 45 minutes, that's kind of what it would be like. And so that's, I think, the most testing thing is working with somebody where you just really don't get the flow of what, you know, when you're in the groove and really writing a song with somebody, it just kind of flows. But sometimes it's like pulling teeth, and sometimes it just doesn't work with somebody. And, you know, I say every first time you go write with somebody is like a first date. You never know how it's going to go, whether you're going to be compatible or incompatible. And so sometimes it's just a little frustrating to sit all day with somebody and really not get the dome all that well, or even be able to write a song. So that's mainly for me what causes the frustration.
Well, I mean, I can't blame you. I mean, like you said, I think it's a great way to compare it to a first date for sure. And when it comes to today's songwriters in the country music world, has there been a song out recently that you've heard and you're like, man, I wish I'd written that, or that was a really well-written song?
Well, I don't hear that many of them that are like that these days. You know, I talked to some of the people, and to me, the 1990s had those, what I call pull over to the side of the road songs, where they were, you know, Ships That Don't Come In, or Walk Away Joe, or the Dance, or I Hope You Dance, all these amazing songs. And I really don't hear those that much these days. I hear them more like in Americana. Like, I just got the new Jason Isbell album, and the songs on that are phenomenal. And the songs on every album he does are phenomenal. And so I think I've become more Americana than country in the last three or four records, just because I write what I want to write and I don't cut records like they cut them in Nashville. You know, I go in with a band and I cut them all in one day and have fun, and don't really do a lot of overdubs. So it's kind of a different world than it used to be in country music. And for me, I've just kind of gone and done my own thing.
Well, I mean, I can't blame you for that. Of course, you know, one should always do what they enjoy the most indeed. And of course, as I mentioned before, you know, you've penned some incredible, incredible songs. And for aspiring songwriters out there, what advice do you have for them?
The best advice I could give is be prepared. And that's in the United States, a Boy Scout motto, be prepared. But it's like, if you're going to go in and write with somebody, make sure you bring some ideas in. If you don't play a musical instrument, learn how to play a musical instrument. It'll be valuable for you and the other people in the room. And kind of say yes to anything that comes along at first. It's harder than ever to me to be a songwriter in Nashville, because songwriters used to get paid when we had CDs on a thing called mechanical. So every time somebody bought a record or a CD and you and I were writers on it, we would get paid. And then it moved to downloads, where you and I could have a song on a George Strait record, but if nobody downloaded it, you didn't get paid. And now it's all moved to streaming, and we don't really get paid much for that. But the people that were writers when I came to town, they got paid by, they would give you a draw. And then when your mechanicals came in on a song you had recorded, then you would help pay back the loan. And so I don't know how young songwriters these days would be able to assist. I guess they drive Ubers, or they are waiters and waitresses or whatever. But there's not that much money coming in for people to pay young writers to write like they used to do.
Yes, it's very sad in that sense, how, should we say, the musical market has changed indeed, like you said, especially it definitely is hurting, I think, the songwriting aspect even more so today for the youngsters who want to get in on the game. And for those who want to find out more about you, you know, your upcoming music and everything else you have going on, Kent, where can we send these folks to?
You can go to kentblazy.com.
Fantastic.
Should have my dates. It should have all the records and where you can get the music and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome stuff indeed. Well, folks, you definitely know now where to go for more Kent Blazy goodness. And speaking of Kent Blazy goodness, Kent, we're going to be seeing you out here with another song off your latest album, which will be The Gift She Is. Now, when it comes to this song, any stories behind this one?
Well, it was written about my wife, but what was funny was, I have a puppy sitter that comes when we're out on the road, and I always leave a guitar out because she has some friends that play, and I don't know if she plays or not, but she may. I came home from one trip and I picked up the guitar and I thought, God, this guitar is really out of tune. And then I started noticing that it was in this tuning called Dadgad, and it's D-A-D-G, let me think, B-D. Or AD. And so I picked it up and I just started playing around with this tuning that it was. And this song started coming out, the licks and all that. And I've been wanting to write this song about my wife. And so thanks to picking up that guitar that I thought was out of tune, a song came out of it. So that's the other thing. Different instruments can inspire different things. I like to write on electric guitar some because it gives it a different feel. And, it's just one of those things. You pick up a guitar you think is out of tune and a song comes out of it.
Well, that's another fantastic anecdote indeed. Well, folks, we are going to be going into this great song. This will be Kent Blazy and The Gift She Is. Kent, I want to once again thank you so, so much for your time. I truly appreciated it. And of course, I want to wish you continued success with your career and all the very best for the remainder of 2023.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate your time.
Oh, well, the pleasure was certainly ours, as I mentioned before. Well, my people, you heard it from the amazing Kent Blazy. Be sure, of course, to keep up to date with everything he has going on, because believe you me, he has a lot of great stuff going on. He has a new album out there, From the Beatles to the Bluebird. Be sure to pick that up. Here's another great song from it. This will be The Gift She Is. You are tuned into The Whiskey and Cigarettes Show with your Italian DJ Nick. We'll be right back after this.
just one touch made me a believer. She's a lover in every single way. She's Dr. Wuther. She's a teacher who can teach me, a preacher who can reach me, and I can see the angel in her eyes. And every day I realize the gift she is to me. Well, she knows that joy is a simple state of mind, and she's showing me I can choose it all the time. It's in her words and in her kiss, it's every moment that I live I see. To amaze me, she says anything is possible, and I just have to believe all the gifts she is.